Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Teacher Development Trust Section, learning from the team at TDT on best practice CPD with research.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to Naylor's Natter. My name's David Weston and I'm Chief Executive of the Teacher Development Trust. Naylor's Natter is a podcast in partnership with the Teacher Development Trust, and we are the national charity for effective development in schools and colleges, trying to support school leaders to make schools the places where teachers get better more quickly. So today's special edition, I'm interviewing Jack Worth from the National Foundation for Education Research, which you may know as NFER. Jack, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Do you want to say a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm an economist. I'm the lead economist at the National Foundation for Educational Research. And a lot of my research at the moment is focused on the teacher labour market in England, looking at recruitment, retention, and development of teachers, and how, at the moment, given that we're facing a big teacher supply challenge, how we can retain enough teachers to meet growing demand for teachers in the future.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, it couldn't be more topical, really, if you tried. So before we go into this new piece of research, which obviously I think is going to be very interesting to lots of the listeners, just tell us a little bit about your career to date. How did you get into doing this sort of work?
So I did my degree in economics, so I'm an economist by training, and I very nearly went into teaching, actually, after I graduated. Flirted with Teach First and thought about it, but in the end, I ended up getting a job at the university economics department with Professor Simon Burgess, who's just a brilliant economist, and that was just a fantastic 2 years where I got to work on the National Pupil Database, get my head into lots of educational data, understand things about ethnic segregation in schools and the school accountability system, and that kind of set me up in terms of my interest and those skills. I went away to do my master's degree in economics and then tried a bit of economics consulting, but what kept drawing me back was this interest in education. So 7 years ago now, I joined the National Foundation for Educational Research, and I've been working there ever since as a quantitative analyst. And yeah, as the interest in the teacher labour market has increased due to the supply challenges, my work is increasingly focused on that, on understanding retention, understanding recruitment better, so we can better meet the challenges.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. In a sense, I have sort of research envy here as well, because obviously started my career in teaching and ended up being more and more interested in the numbers and the research and the economics. And you sort of nearly did the teaching, but ended up kind of getting closer and closer to education with your research, didn't you?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So I talk to a lot of teachers. I know a lot of teachers. I've never been one, but it's just fascinating to research their lives, research their careers, and to feed that back into the profession so that we can understand the teaching profession better and do better by it.
Definitely. So look, let's talk a little bit about this new piece of research, which is coming out very shortly. In fact, by the time this podcast is out in the public domain, it should be just out. So tell us a little bit about the research. What are the headlines? And then let's dig into some details.
So the focus of the research is this concept of teacher autonomy. So how much influence teachers have over what the areas of work that they do. We got interested in this about a year ago when we found some measures of work autonomy in a household survey, so we could compare teachers with groups of other professionals to see, well, how do measures of work-related control or influence differ between different professionals, and where do teachers sit compared to other professionals? And that was showing that teachers were significantly below other professions in terms of how much autonomy they felt they had in their jobs, autonomy is strongly related to job satisfaction. Now, we know how important job satisfaction is for retention, so that got us interested in, okay, we need to understand this better. And then the second phase of the research was that these measures of autonomy in the household survey weren't very generic, were very generic, but weren't very specific to teaching. They were about how you do your work or what kind of tasks you do in your work. Not very specific, so not very easy to understand what does this mean for teaching. So then we put some further questions into our Omnibus survey, which is a termly survey of teachers called Teacher Voice Survey that NFER runs. So we put some autonomy questions that really got to the grips of, you know, how much influence do you feel like you have over your teaching methods, your planning, your preparation, your curriculum, the assessment, your professional development, and then asked a series of questions about intention to stay in the profession, about job satisfaction. So again, we found this autonomy measure was strongly related to job satisfaction and retention, which is a really crucial finding because it gives us a better understanding of what's driving what's driving job satisfaction and retention, which we really care about at the moment because of the supply challenges.
Yeah, so those are some big headlines. Maybe if we start at the beginning there, just reflecting a little bit on that first finding from your national data set of exploring why do we think teachers feel so much less autonomy than many other professions. And there were a couple of other professions with low autonomy, weren't there?
There were. So it tends to be a public sector thing. So there's health professionals and civil servants tend to have roughly similar levels of autonomy. So it may just be a part of the way the public sector is run. But there does seem to be a real cost to that in terms of job satisfaction. So there is scope for thinking about how teaching could improve to match the average among other professions, which is a bit higher. But it's worth saying that a lot of teachers did report a lot of autonomy over their work, so it wasn't completely all negative, but this gap does suggest that there's some important kind of ground to make up, if you like, that would be beneficial for teachers.
So in that part of the report, one of the other things that really caught my eye was how in most professions, as people get more experienced, generally speaking, their autonomy increases. But for a classroom teacher who stays a classroom teacher, that wasn't the case, was it?
No, absolutely, it wasn't. So we expected to find the lowest autonomy amongst the early career teachers in the first 5 years. So that was kind of unexpected as a finding. But then for classroom teachers, it does not increase beyond that 5 year period. So, you know, a teacher with 15 years of experience doesn't have more autonomy, as they report, than a teacher with 5 or 10 years of experience. What we did find was that if teachers go into senior leadership, or into a leadership role, they experience an increase in autonomy. And this, again, is another finding across other professions, that it's those kind of management roles that see an increase in autonomy. But yeah, throughout classroom teachers, no increase. So the only way to improve autonomy for a teacher seems to be, on average, to go into senior leadership.
Yeah, which of course means less teaching, doesn't it? So the irony being, if you want to get more autonomy as a teacher, you need to do less teaching. So that was a very interesting finding, and I think that will probably ring true to a lot of people listening, because of course it's very difficult to get more control over what you do until you have those sort of levers of power as a senior leader. So what I thought was really interesting is obviously you found that fascinating data set, but you wanted to find out more. And of course, being an FER, you have the tools to find out more.
We do.
So you then went and started exploring other aspects of autonomy. Do you want to just give us a few thoughts? What other aspects did you look at? And what were the surprises there?
Yeah, so we wanted to get beyond this idea that autonomy is just one thing, and that, you know, more or less is better, is always better for everybody all of the time, which seems to be just, you know, roughly where the debate was. So to dig into it a bit, inject some nuance into it. So look at these different factors in terms of what happens in the classroom, what happens outside the classroom, more outside things like curriculum and assessment. And generally we saw a pattern in terms of those within classroom things tend to have quite high levels of autonomy reported by teachers. So teaching strategies, planning, preparation, how your classroom is laid out, that kind of thing. Is relatively high. Then it's a bit lower for assessment and how formative assessment works in your classroom, which again you might expect because teachers, that tends to be kind of driven by school policies to some extent. And over curriculum is a bit lower as well, and especially in terms of what data is collected. Which is a big debate about how much data schools should be collecting, but often the data collection is kind of driven by the schools, the leadership, rather than by the individual teachers. But what was a real surprise looking at these different areas of autonomy was that autonomy over professional development goals was particularly low. So only 23% said they had a lot of autonomy in this area. and 38% said that he had either none or a little influence over their professional development goals, which seemed to be not quite fitting with where we might expect it to be, and potentially a bit of a concern.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it feels ironic to me in some cases where a learning profession, we're all about helping children learn and gain that sense of, I suppose, autonomy over their own learning and a sense of mastery. And we're not always doing it very well for teachers. And but I suppose the question is autonomy always a good thing? Should we really allow everybody autonomy over as many aspects of their practice? Or is there a benefit sometimes to standardize things and have some less freedom?
That's a really good question, and something that it's tricky to answer with just the data that we had. I suspect the answer is a strong no, but in several different ways. So that's why we pulled together a practitioner focus group to talk to some teachers about this and understand the nuances of what we were finding a bit more, and also talk to some policy people about, you know, what does this mean in practice for people you work with. I think there's two important aspects in which it's important to say not necessarily is more autonomy always better. One is there's different areas of work where there's more or less importance for increasing it or decreasing it. And one area we found, so the professional development area was particularly low, but it was also on its own the strongest associated with increases in job satisfaction. So there's a nuance in terms of, you know, which autonomy you focus on particularly to get the most benefit in terms of satisfaction. And then the second reason that autonomy might not always be, more is always better, which is the other side of the coin, which is this point about school level consistency and what's the experience for pupils. If teachers are all going off in their own direction, I've got, 100% autonomy, I can do what I like. Yeah. Is that damaging for pupils? Well, obviously 100% autonomy over everything, probably, because you need that coherence within a school. And it's important for school leaders to understand what's that balance between coherence and autonomy. But when we say balance, we don't necessarily mean a trade-off of, I could get more of one or less of another. It's trying to get the most of both at the same time, and trying to maintain consistency while also getting staff buy-in to that consistent policy or activity.
Sure. I suppose on that very practical classroom level, no one likes to have their children say, "Oh, but Mrs. Smith lets us do this," because that's incredibly wearing. And actually, some consistency over that is probably helpful, isn't it? Or, or last year they were taught by Mrs. Smith, who used the same series of textbooks, so therefore I can just fairly consistently pick up from where they were and carry that on. So, yeah, you can see there are definitely areas where you could make all those choices, but it might not be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think curriculum is a great example of that, where you need a coherent curriculum within a school. It needs to be properly sequenced so that, if you're in one class, it makes sense when you move into the next class that your curriculum is building as you go through school as a pupil. So it needs to be a collective endeavour. Same with assessment. If you're all using completely different assessment systems, that's chaos and not going to be very effective use of assessment. But that said, I think the influence point of autonomy is about staff buying into whatever this consistent policy is. And if you're, wanting teachers to conform to a certain thing, a certain way, and teachers really don't buy into that, that's where you get a lack of motivation. You're undermining their intrinsic motivation. That's where job satisfaction goes down. That's where burnout happens. And that's what we want to avoid.
And I mean, that interests me hugely. If you look at the literature on change management, almost all effective change involves people in that process and isn't just sort of foisted on them. So you can even, I suppose, we even in a very large group, we could come up with an agreement of what we'll do. I don't have omni autonomy over it, but at least I felt I contributed to it.
Yes.
There's a lot of nuance here, isn't there? Because I'm thinking, there will be school leaders listening to this and thinking, okay, this is all very well, but what do I do as a result? What are the next steps for me in order to increase autonomy? And actually, do I even feel secure and comfortable increasing teacher autonomy?
Yeah.
So you've touched upon that one particular aspect, professional development goals.
Yeah.
And autonomy over those. expand a little bit more, if you would please, Jack, because what might school leaders do to increase autonomy in that area, particularly if it's going to increase that intention to stay in the profession and stay in that school?
Yeah. So this is why we got you involved as well, because the Teacher Development Trust obviously do a lot of working with schools and really understand the challenges that schools are facing and school leaders face in terms of making professional development relevant for teachers, while also balancing the fact that you've got whole school development goals, you've got pupil needs, you've got teachers' needs, which we're trying to think about through this, and try to bring those all together into something that teachers buy into. So it's a hard problem, it's not an easy problem. That's the first thing to say. And in terms of what to do next, I think just think really carefully about how professional development is designed and how it's delivered. Are teachers feeding in at appropriate times into what they want to achieve to get better at? And is the CPD that's on offer in that school meeting the needs? Is it felt to be relevant by those teachers? Because if it's not felt to be relevant, it's not going to be very motivating because teachers don't see the point, it doesn't change their practice, but B, it's also likely to be ineffective. And so you've got the worst of all worlds where you're demotivating staff, but also potentially impacting on pupil outcomes, where greater involvement and greater input could actually help to improve pupil outcomes and motivate teachers better.
Yes, I know you and I have talked about this quite a lot. What sort of practical steps can people do? And I know we've talked about ideas like trying to ensure that teachers are able to reflect back what their individual needs are, both, I suppose, professionally, but also from a career point of view. But one of the things that schools then often forget is, what does each team need? What does each phase team or each subject team need? Because sometimes a teacher might say, well, I need some training on a new system, and the school improvement target is improving vocabulary, but actually my particular subject area, we need something else. So it is complicated. You talk about that balance. Does this relate to performance management in some way, do you think?
Yeah, this was one of our thoughts. I know it's something you brought up as well, in terms of, is it, given how interwoven the performance management system is with the professional development planning can be, how interrelated those two were. So was it teachers judging their performance management targets or whatever, rather than thinking about their professional development goals? I think they are strongly related, and I think thinking through that whole system is what schools should focus on, because it's ultimately all wrapped up together.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly lost count of the number of schools who are trying to do brilliant professional development. It's just fantastic, but then they haven't thought of it as a system with performance management. And so you've got one system where people are having this, you know, annual review with big clunky targets and line management meetings that happen, and everyone's, oh no, I've got to get my appraisal stuff out. And on the other hand, they've got all these lovely options of what to choose in CPD and whole school projects. And what you find, of course, is that teachers say, well, I'd love to engage more in this particular piece of CPD, but ultimately I know it's actually my target and performance management that makes the biggest difference to me.
Yeah.
So if they are not linked, you've got a problem. Although the challenge for us all is that if you link them too hard, you've also got a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if I say to you, Jack, you're going to get a pay rise if you achieve this target, and that target is engaging in this piece of CPD, it's going to change your mindset a little bit, isn't it?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Regardless of whether or not it's relevant, and hopefully I've had an input into that process, but if I haven't, then that's going
absolutely
to be doubly demotivating.
Yeah, it'll turn into a jazz hands activity of what do I need to show you, don't you?
Yeah.
So it's such a fascinating piece of research, and I'd really recommend that listeners go and have a look at this research when it's published. And Teacher Development Trust has produced a little guide for senior leaders of the sorts of things they might like to choose.
Absolutely,
as well.
And I think I highly recommend that as well. That's a really good complementary piece to this. Is what can school leaders do next as a result of this?
Thank you very much. You'll be invited again, Jack. what's NFER's website that they can go and find this research?
It's www.nfer.ac.uk, and to find the link to all the resources related to this project is /teacher autonomy.
Great. Okay. So that's nice and easy, isn't it? So this is not the only research you do, is it?
It is not. It is but one piece in our portfolio of work.
So tell us a little bit more then. I think people will be quite interested in some of the other research that you do. What are you working on at the moment? What are some of the things you've been doing that you thought have been particularly interesting recently?
So as we discussed at the beginning, the teacher labour market is a really important focus for the whole of the education system at the moment, making sure recruitment is there, that retention is improving, and that we're ensuring that there's a supply of teachers in the future. So a lot of our work is going into issues related to that. And one of our big pieces of research is our Teacher Labour Market Annual Report. Mm. And that will be coming out in March this year. So looking at all of the latest available data on teacher recruitment, teacher retention, where are teachers coming from, and also thinking hard about teachers' working conditions and trying to measure those the best we can. So what's happening to working hours, what's happening to job security, what's happening to job-related stress, so we can understand the factors that are really important and where they're going. Mm. Are we making progress to meeting this challenge?
Mm. Now, you've been looking at this area for quite a long time, haven't you? And most people tend to summarise the state of the research in this area as, we've got a problem. Fair to say, would you agree with that assessment?
I think we have got a problem. We've got an emerging problem. Well, it's been emerging for several years, and it's beginning to not emerge and become a yeah. real problem for schools, especially in secondary schools, yeah. where the recruitment targets have been missed for 7 years in a row, even longer back for some of the perennial shortage subjects like maths, physics, modern foreign languages. Mm. And that's emerging as a real problem. And that's something we're going to focus on in a new piece of research, which we're excited about announcing next month, which is looking at that issue of teacher shortages. Mm. And what impact is this having on schools?
So right now, if I gave you a magic wand, what do you think, what would you be tempted to do that would actually help alleviate this issue? Because obviously it's easy to kind of say, oh, you know, let's think of really simple things like, you know, we'll abolish all accountability, we'll triple pay, we'll do all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Perhaps those aren't all completely realistic. they might cause some other knock-on issues. So what would you do if you were in charge here? What would be the things you'd be looking at right now?
So I think there have been some important movements on pay. I think pay is important, especially to early career teachers and especially to the decision about recruitment. Mm-hmm. So the decision to focus pay increases on those very early teachers, I think will have an impact on yeah. recruitment and on retention.
Yeah.
It may not please everybody because it inevitably within the fixed pay envelope or funding envelope will mean lower pay rises for those further up the pay scale. But from our research, we know that pay is not the kind of number one factor for most teachers who are deciding whether or not to leave. But it can be a really salient factor for those entering the profession and those yes. in their first couple of years who may be, especially in the shortage subjects, have good outside options. So on balance, I think that's a good lever to pull.
Yeah.
And it's also quite an easy lever for government to pull.
Yeah.
If you say solve workload, then you know, it sounds great because workload is the most important reason why teachers say they leave. But there's not one, you know, big button. You just press the workload button and suddenly it's solved. That, again, is a really complex problem.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned accountability. I mean, accountability has positive effects on the system as well. So we don't want to completely abolish the accountability system, but some changes around the margin could make a real difference to
yeah.
the way teachers feel about their jobs and trying to focus on recruiting and retaining teachers without having the negative impacts from
yeah.
removing it entirely.
So I suppose, look, if I was sat in the Department for Education right now, I'd feel quite pleased with that answer because you've just said the thing that would probably help is the thing that they're trying to do. But workload, of course, is interesting because they've been trying to come up with guidance and reports and advice on workload for a long time. And I suppose going back to the ideas of autonomy, one of the problems has often been to say, oh, we'll save teachers from doing any of their own planning. You know, here's just some standardized resources. But of course, some teachers say, oh, I've lost my autonomy on that now. I don't get to plan my own lessons. And actually, yeah. that was one of the things I really liked. So it's quite tough, isn't it? Changing workload is pretty difficult.
It really is. But I think that's where the autonomy, our new autonomy research can really help. Because I think the debate around workload tends to get really focused on number of working hours, so yeah. the amount you're working.
Yeah.
And what we found is there's no relationship at all between autonomy and how many hours you're working. Mm. Teachers with high autonomy, low autonomy, working the same number of hours,
mm.
but it's massively related to their perceptions of how manageable their workload
yeah.
is. And that's the really key thing that switches your decision to stay into a decision to leave
yeah.
If you feel like you can't manage your workload.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just making that discussion about workload a bit more nuanced into, it's not just about what you do and how long you spend doing it,
mm.
it's also about how you're directed to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit Bananarama here, isn't it? It ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure so many teachers listening to this will have thought about, you know, marking books where you're only filling something in because someone is going to be looking at your books, and in this particular bit of feedback is going to do nothing for them.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other hand, you can lose yourself for a couple of hours planning a really exciting lesson, creating a great resource, or, you know, reading through some fantastic pieces of work that your students have done. And 2 hours in each case, maybe, but they feel completely different. One energizes you and the other one makes you...
And different teachers have different preferences
yeah.
and stuff, which does make it hard for senior leaders as well.
Yeah.
In that, you know, some might say, if you ever stop me from writing my own lessons, I think I'd leave because that is my creativity. That's
yeah.
what I love doing. And, you know, I've spoken to other teachers who just say, just give me a lesson plan. I just want to know
yeah.
what to teach and to get
yeah.
on with it and to teach it in my own way, but just to be told what to do and
yeah.
given some resources so I don't have to spend hours preparing them. And there's a real mixture out there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, people are complex, and that's the problem of being a leader, isn't it? You actually have to try and square this circle.
Yeah.
Look, you're someone who reads a lot of research and you see kind of the other things that are going on. What else is interesting you on the research landscape right now? What are you finding that's particularly interesting, or stuff that you've read or someone?
There is a lot of interesting research in the USA. I know you and I are both big fans of Matthew Kraft.
Yes, absolutely, huge super fan. Hello Matthew, if you're listening, I hope so.
So I've just been reading his recent paper about teacher accountability systems, so high stakes accountability, and what impact that has had on teacher recruitment in the US, which kind of has lots of parallels here, because we do a lot of trying to understand teacher recruitment, teacher retention in this country.
Yeah.
But we can't really analyze those system changes. You know, what if we change the accountability system? We don't know, because we only have one accountability system, so we have
yeah.
no counterfactual. Whereas in the US, you've got things happening at different times in different states. You can really look across.
Yeah.
So I've just been reading that fascinating piece of research, which actually talks to some of this autonomy research as well. So suggesting that the increases in high stakes teacher level accountability, so using value added of pupil progress and observation ratings to make, you know, decisions about ultimately firing teachers, has a really detrimental impact on the numbers of teaching people coming into teaching.
Yeah.
So it shifts people towards the kind of more qualified teachers, so maybe the higher quality teachers.
Yeah.
But the mechanism for that is lower job security. Teachers feel less secure in their jobs.
Yeah.
They feel less autonomous,
yeah.
and they have lower job satisfaction.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really interesting to me at the moment, is what are the impact of those accountability systems been?
Yeah.
And what can we learn from that, seeing as we can't do any research on it ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very easily.
I always wonder if this is a little bit, I often talk about the teacher down the pub, and actually if they're saying great things about their job, all their friends will go, oh, that sounds really good, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
And if they're saying, oh God, it's awful and I can't even join you in the pub because, you know, I'm doing all of these difficult, filling all these forms and doing all of this work, then there's a lot of advertising power there. Actually,
there's half a million advocates for the teaching profession out there, and we
absolutely.
Need to do more to make them positive advocates.
Yeah, well, let alone all the teaching assistants and the support workforce who are talking
absolutely.
About how they see teachers treated
mm-hmm.
as well. And of course, there's a fascinating thing, isn't there, the number of people who go in as teaching assistants who think of retraining as teachers.
Yeah.
And of course, why would you if you think, well, wow, their autonomy looks really low, it doesn't have job satisfaction. Yeah, Matthew Kraft's research is always fascinating. And definitely going to have to try and get him on at some point as well. Jack, thank you very much. I think this has been an interesting exploration of some of the research. You've already given the website, but why don't you just give the website again, just so people know where to have a look at some of NFER's fantastic resources.
Sure, yeah, it's www.nfer.ac.uk.
Brilliant, and if people would like to have a look at some of the Teacher Development Trust resources around this area, it's www.tdtrust.org. Thank you very much, Phil. Back to you in the studio.
Nailers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Teacher Development Trust section, learning from the team at TDT on best practice CPD with research.
Nailers Netter, just talking to teachers.